Hello and welcome to Talking Leadership. This is Eric Perez welcoming you back to our podcast series on the topic of leadership. Thanks for joining me once again. And today's guest, by way of introduction, is a senior lecturer in the School of Science and Engineering at the University of Sunshine Coast and is also a manager for defence engagement. Now, welcome to the podcast, Adrian McCallum. How are you, Adrian?
Eric, very well. Thanks for the opportunity to have a chat with you this morning.
Mate, fantastic. Thank you for your time. So let's go to where I always go with my first question here, and that is, which industry was your first leader role and why did you take that on, mate?
Look, I'd have to say it's defence. For better or worse, I left straight from high school to join the Military Academy in Canberra, which is the tri-service institution where essentially we train our military leaders for tomorrow. So I left school at 17, went to ADFA, where I studied my initial degree, and it's all about training military leaders. So I was very fortunate to be thrown straight into the pit of learning how to lead, attributes of an officer, of a leader across all three services, and being given the opportunity, I suppose, to try and practice that craft from a very early age. So in my third year there, I was appointed to a cadet leadership position, I suppose, as second in command of a squadron, which is maybe 120 cadets. So that was probably my first taste of larger scale hands-on leadership. And the beauty is that I had 3 years of immersive leadership training. I'd watched good leaders around me. So we were very fortunate in that environment that we had lots of good leaders who we could potentially model our own leadership activities upon.
Just if I can, Adrian, I'd just like to unpack that a little bit. So get that your first experience was from a military perspective, but out in the non-military world, did you see much by way of differences between the leadership philosophy, for want of a better word, from a military perspective to that in civilian life?
Yeah, that's a good point you raise. It's funny because at USC, so my current institution, University of the Sunshine Coast, to their credit, they run an emerging leaders program, or they used to run it on a yearly basis, and they would bring in, new to mid-level staff and invite them to participate. And I remember one of my discussions there with someone who had spent their time in academia, and we certainly both had very different perspectives on what leadership is and what leaders should be doing to make things happen. So it's difficult for me to disentangle my civilian and military perspectives on leadership because although I'd spent time as a child, I suppose, as a school kid in leadership roles, as school captains say, that's probably my only very small taste of civilian leadership that I had before being indoctrinated into the ways of the military and military leadership. So most of my perspectives, I suppose, for better or worse, come from the military model. Which obviously dictates or expects or suggests certain ways of behaviour that perhaps are most effective in that environment.
It addresses that issue that, the environment in which you operate can dictate how you're a leader. And I'm just intuitively, you would think that there were some differences between those two worlds. And I thank you for sharing that perspective, mate. So
I can unpack that a little bit for you more, sorry, Eric, in that it's probably, to some extent, I was going to say easier in the military because at least the people you are leading know the model that they're within. They expect to be led and they expect to do what they're told, whereas academia, of course, is the exact opposite. No one expects to be led necessarily. No one likes to do what they're told. So you need to employ very different strategies to try and coerce people to follow you in academia than you otherwise might need to employ in the military.
And again, this is why I love doing these podcasts. That's a really insightful bit of information there around the fact that the people that are led expect to be led and expect to be told this is the game and this is what we're doing. And that is very different in the in the civilian world. But to some extent, and I won't name the leaders that have crossed paths with me in my past, but that has been the mindset that I've seen of some in the non-military world that, as soon as I say something, you just need to jump to attention and get it done. And that's not quite the way that it's that leadership is experienced in a non-military context. So again, we could talk about this for hours, mate, but let's move on to the next question. I think this one will be interesting to get your perspective on is, in your travels in the context of in which you've been a leader, and let's go to the military context, did you see much of a difference between the leadership and management functions of those you were working with?
Because military leaders, in my experience, are both you know, inherently trained as leaders and, you know, trained as managers or as administrators. I suppose, again, it's hard to disentangle both of those from a military perspective in that I expect, and most of the time I was, you know, given bosses, managers who were inherently leaders, and that's because they'd come through the military system of 3 or 4 years training generally, where, you know, their psyche was about leading teams of, you know, sailors, soldiers, airmen into battle. So you are fortunate that most of your own leaders there had come through that cookie cutter process to some extent. So they were first and foremost inherently a leader. Managers, to my mind, you know, need to get the nitty gritty done, need to make sure the administrative cogs of a machine keep on turning. And most of them would have had management skills that they would have learnt or would have picked up in the job. But again, in my experience, and it's probably how it should be, most of the military leaders I've come across are probably more a leader than a manager. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because certainly something I believe, you know, I've come to understand is that it's quite easy to teach people technical skills, you know, A plus B equals C, do this to drive that or whatever it might be. And to my mind, they're more managerial processes, whereas, you know, leaders are the ones that we need to be standing aloof from those intimate processes to some extent to inspire us to keep the team moving. I would certainly agree with your premise that we spoke about earlier, that a manager is not necessarily a leader. And conversely, I suppose a leader is not necessarily a good manager, but I'd rather have a good leader than a good manager in front of me.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Slightly off that the positive tangent, and love to get your perspective on the following. So leaders sometimes make mistakes, like all human beings do. Mm. How do you engage with an error or mistake that's been attributed to your leadership?
Look, I think all of us as human beings, you know, many of us blokes in particular, perhaps don't like being told we're wrong, or don't like having things pointed out to us that, you know, that our decision might have caused X or Y bad thing to happen. So it's inherent in our human nature, I think, to not like shouldering the responsibility of making bad decisions. But I think that's exactly what we need to do. We need to, you know, stick your hand up, say, yes, I made a mistake, and we need to learn from that. We need to, you know, do some self-analysis as to why that decision was made, so that we can hopefully improve our decision-making process in the future. And we need to communicate that process to those who we're leading so that they understand that we are comfortable and agree that a period of self-reflection is necessary in light of any bad decision, so that we as an organization or a unit or a team can move on. And I think that's necessary to clearly communicate to the team so that they understand that, okay, we all have failings. Our leader has recognized that even he or she may have failings at times, but that's okay because they've learned from that, they've improved from that, and we're still ready to work with this person into the future. So I think we just need to, as you say, engage with the, you know, the mistake we may or may not have made, learn from it and move on.
What in your mind, and again, in your experience, Adrian, is the most difficult part of being a leader?
I was reflecting on this question earlier today, and I think it's the fact that, you know, you can't really switch off, or you shouldn't really switch off. I mean, we all need to switch off occasionally. I often think of our political leaders, especially at this time, and even our local, you know, federal and state members, etc. They're doing a lot of work, but whenever I communicate with them, I try and encourage them to make sure that they take, you know, an hour off, 2 hours off, go for a run, you know, sit and read a book for at least some time, because leaders are constantly on guard. They're constantly aware of the responsibility and the burdens that may be upon their shoulders, of the need to keep leading, especially in times of crisis. But I think we're fortunate today. We all realise and understand that looking after oneself almost needs to be at the top of the tree, because if you can't look after yourself, then you can't look after others. So everyone, every leader needs to make sure in their daily, weekly, monthly routines that they have some time for downtime so that they can, you know, regenerate themselves so that they can lead again effectively the next day. If leaders work themselves to the bone, grind themselves into the ground, then no one wins. So I think the hardest part, coming back to your question, is that they constantly need to be thinking about what's next. They can't relax and necessarily say she'll be right, because ultimately they've got to carry the can. But as part of that, they also need to recognise the self-care element that's necessary for them to remain functioning as an effective leader into the future.
And thanks for sharing that, Adrian. That particular point about self-care is something that's come up not as often as I thought it would through the podcast process. And I guess given the amount of stress out in the world, On any given day, that having some time, 5-10 minutes to get up, walk away from a screen, and just not be in that zone for a little bit is actually quite liberating, and is a way to just cool down the system. If you get my meaning, that you can't just be entrenched in the one thing all the time. Not that you can't. Some people don't see that need for self-care, as you put it, and that has detrimental impacts down the track, particularly around your moods, maybe your health, your general health, getting out, like you said, go for a ride or a walk, or just get away from your situation for a little while, can clear the head. And I've been lucky that in the before the recordings of the podcast with other guests, that they did mention, like you, exercise. So one said, I go to the gym, and I do myself as well. I like going to the gym. It's a place where I can space out and not think about anything but focusing on task at hand, which is doing some exercise. PT or physical training, that's a part of everyday life for the military. Is that correct?
Yeah, look, it is. It's funny you mentioned that, because I often say to my kids, my wife, my friends, that yes, from the age of 17, when I joined the military academy, every day, generally 6 o'clock in the morning, perhaps earlier, the day would start with PT. And look, I get a bit slack these days. I don't always start the day at 6 a.m. with PT, I confess. But, like anything, if you do it often enough, it becomes habitual. And I think it's a terrific habit, the podcast or the YouTube clip you may know of the Admiral, the US Admiral, who says first thing in the morning, make your bed every morning, set yourself some routines, set yourself some disciplines.
Yep.
And I think daily PT, it's probably there for a reason. It keeps you physically fit. Hopefully, as you say, it clears the brain, it retains your mental agility. And of course, in the military, it's all about team building, working in teams. So it helps you, work together via exercise in a team. So it does many, many things that I think are invaluable, of course, in military service, but also for leaders to be amongst the troops, build that camaraderie, but also give yourself some mental space for the day ahead.
Life in general, mate, I think PT every day for every human being is just a good normal thing to keep you healthy, and water for all those things that you get in middle age and older. So look after yourself when you're younger, and it helps you very much down the track. So no, I fully agree with that. So something more positive, Adrian, how do you measure success as a leader?
Look, Eric, I was reflecting on this, and I think I would say that ultimately as a leader, you're hoping to devolve the roles from yourself. So you're hoping to empower your team sufficiently so that they believe in themselves sufficiently to carry out the roles assigned to them. So to my mind, you as a leader, you shouldn't actually be doing too much, keyboard tapping or whatever it might be. You're meant to be retaining that strategic vision to know where the organization or the unit is going. You need to give yourself space to be able to have those thoughts. So I view the essential role of the leader to empower those who they're purportedly leading. And if you can build them up sufficiently to believe in themselves to achieve their goals, it becomes a positive reinforcement cycle. They believe in themselves more and more. You can give them more work to do. They're comfortable because they know they're competent. So outcomes for a leader, or how do you measure success, I would say it's certainly measured by the success, the happiness, the output of the team that you are leading. And if you do that well, then any KPIs or organizational requirements or goals you're meant to be hitting, they should be enabled. So if you aim for the target as your first primary driver, then I'm not sure you're going to get there. But if you build your people up and take them on your journey to aim for that target so that they're supporting you and vice versa, then hopefully you'll get there.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, Adrian, look, I've got some statements here that I'd love to get your perspective on. The first being, on-the-job experience develops better leaders.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. I think in any role, and I see this in my first year engineering students, I throw them in the deep end from week one to some extent, because we need to give everyone, I believe, a sufficient amount of rope, not so that they hang themselves, of course, but we need to give them the responsibility to understand that people are entrusting them. If we put trust in them, they believe in themselves. There will be some faltering initially, but that's all part of the learning process, and they will develop as a person, develop as a leader, believe in themselves more, and be more capable and effective as a team member and ultimately a leader themselves. So I certainly agree that incremental training on the job, giving people more and more responsibility with sufficient support so that they don't go off the rails, is absolutely key to developing people as leaders.
So let me go to the other side of that former statement is formal education helps to develop better leaders.
Yeah, look, I would highlight the word helps there. I would agree that it probably does help people to develop better leaders. But if I think you just looked at education in isolation from practical experience, then I would doubt that you could fulfill your potential as a leader. So I think all leaders, coming back to self-care earlier, all leaders no doubt or should recognise that ongoing self-education to get up to speed with what the latest leadership strategies might be is very important. And of course, the leaders need to have the intellect to accept whether or not those strategies are appropriate for their leadership situation. So they need to interrogate the tools available to them, whether or not they are not useful. But I certainly agree that a facet of our professional development should always be to educate ourselves, whether that's formally through universities or constantly through blogs or emails or podcasts, whatever it might be. Hopefully leaders are always looking for those little tidbits of assistance that just might help them engage the team and enable and empower people a bit better down the track.
Almost like sort of getting that edge in terms of your understanding of what it is to be a leader. And yeah, I've heard this consistently as well in the feedback. So thank you for that, Adrian. So here's the next statement. I'm sure you've been contemplating this one. Leaders are born, not made.
Yeah, look, that's always a very interesting discussion point. And I would say that no, they're not born. They certainly can be made. But having said that, I think the environment that anyone grows up in to some extent dictates how they view themselves, their assertiveness or otherwise, and their capacity for self-belief to then enable them to become a leader of others. So, I'm a firm believer with children, with students, my primary role is to believe in them. If you give someone belief, they will believe in themselves and then they can achieve whatever they dream is possible. If you deny them that belief, they won't believe in themselves and all of a sudden they won't go anywhere. So it's environmental from my perspective, in my opinion, from, the day of birth, we need to be there to support our children who become our youth, who become our junior leaders to go on and lead our institutions and our nations, etc. So I doubt they're born, but we certainly need to assist all we can in providing an environment that enables them to be the best they can be to come out as the best leaders that they can possibly be.
Thanks, Adrian. I think you're in the wrong profession at uni there, mate. You should be a politician. I reckon we need to hear more of that out in the world than what we typically get. But anyway, I think you prefer to stay at university. So here's the next part of this podcast is around some of the research that I'm doing. I'll put my hand up to say I'm an early career researcher and I'm looking at leadership from the agricultural and fisheries lens and suggesting that from that literature and from the literature that I'm looking at in leadership, that strategic thinking and foresight are probably the most critical leader capabilities for future leaders, not the only ones.
Being an academic or having become an academic, I'm fairly pedantic about wording. So I read that statement and I took a gripe with the word most. So look, from my perspective, I certainly believe that strategic thinking and foresight are extremely critical. And I discussed it earlier that I think a leader, needs to empower his team sufficiently so that they have time and space to think strategically about what's next and where are we going as an organization. But I think I disagree with that word most because I think you can have all the strategic insight and foresight in the world, but if you don't have the capability to inspire and empower your team to get there, then there's no point. You're living in a fairyland. So I think as a leader, you need to, of course, give yourself the time and opportunity to envisage where that strategic endpoint is or that staging point. But first and foremost, beyond that, I think you need to have the tools and the skills to empower your team to get there. Otherwise, defining that endpoint is of no value.
For the sake of those listening, if I had to look at every potentially critical leadership capability, I don't think I'd ever finish my study. So it's part of my training process, I guess, that I had to delimit my study to some degree. But yeah, I fully agree that if you can't communicate with people, empower people, be empathetic to their situations and get them inspired, no amount of strategic thinking is going to get them over the line.
I agree, Eric. Yeah, well put. Yeah,
totally agree. So just to unpack that a bit more, be interested to get your perspectives on that, the foresight capability, that imagining possible futures. What are your thoughts on that as a capability?
So I'm just seeking clarity on that. I suppose, are you asking me as a leader, do I envisage that having foresight is important in my role?
Correct.
Yeah, look, I do. And I think, foresight's not a magical thing that we can pluck from the sky. Hopefully we gain that foresight by being informed of the environment that we're operating in. As I often tell my first year engineering students, time spent on reconnaissance is seldom wasted. And I think, as leaders, we need to understand the landscape that we're operating in. And that comes back to, self-development, continuing professional development, et cetera, and the leaders giving themselves the space to be aware of those opportunities. I was reflecting on this question, actually, that too often, perhaps in smaller organizations, someone like the CEO, who's purportedly tasked with strategic leadership, often just doesn't get the time in their day-to-day answering of emails and managing of staff to effectively set and prosecute a strategic agenda. So I think it's certainly very important to make space and time within any organization and give the leader, whoever that might be, whatever that position is called, to be able to develop that foresight. But again, as I said, that's not a magical capability. It's by determining what the landscape is that you're operating in, what the trends for the future might be, and how you might adapt or pivot to meet or address those into the future.
And thanks again, Adrian. That's quite a critical insight around how much time do leaders actually get to do strategic thinking or apply some what-if scenarios in their own head when they've got to do the day-to-day of being a leader. As a leader, you can't be spending all of your time either just head in the clouds thinking of what-if possibilities, because you need to get stuff done. And so trying to find that balance is sometimes a tricky thing. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does. I completely agree, and all leaders need to resist being, drawn down to put out bushfires all the time. And I think they need to excise time in their diary, essentially, and communicate this to others and give others that time as well. It's okay for the leader to give themselves time. But if I'm giving myself time, then I want to also give my team members time to think about how they're performing their role, etc. So I think a period of self-reflection on own performance and on team, group, organisation performance is essential for anyone to optimise that performance into the future. So, yeah, I completely agree with what you said there.
Adrian, last question, and this one, I'm really looking forward to your response on this one. What might you say to a younger version of yourself about being an effective leader?
Well, look, I did think on this. The first thing that came to mind was patience. I think being a parent has taught me patience. I think if you ask my own parents and my wife and others who know me well, I've perhaps always been impatient in life, impatient for the next exciting adventure or whatever it might be. So I think all leaders need patience. They of course need to listen more than they talk. I'm a firm believer in that. So I would encourage myself, I suppose, to perhaps be less hasty in making decisions. So that was the first observation I made as a potential memo to an earlier self. But then I thought further and thought, I'm not that old now, but I'm almost knocking on the second half of my century. I'm very aware that time goes, life goes. So although patience, I think, is a very valuable attribute for any leader, I think you constantly, if you want to develop your leadership, you need to be seeking opportunities to enable that to happen. And, years can go by, decades can go by, and if you're not constantly thinking about how you can improve yourself, hopefully to then improve others, I certainly believe that we all should be seeking to hit our straps as individuals. But once we've hit our straps to some extent, then I hope that most of us then consider, I'm ticking on okay, but there's others who could potentially use a bit of support. So I hope that in all our roles, professional and personal, that we, as if we perceive ourselves to be leaders, then we should be empowering others in whatever we do, trying to give everyone the opportunity to lead a very fulfilling and rich life, and then to spread that out by their own network. So to summarise all that, I would say, yes, use patience, be kind to people, but also grasp opportunities constantly, because if you want to further your ability, your skills as a leader, and hopefully your positive empowerment of others, then time goes. So grab those opportunities when you can.
And on that very positive note, I'd like to thank my podcast guest, Dr. Adrian McCallum. Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate that. I wish we had more time.
No worries, mate. And so for those listening, this has been Talking Leadership with your podcast host, Eric Perez, and I'll catch you all in the next podcast.